Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, my name is Gary Parrish, columnist, television analyst for CBS Sports, and I'm coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Got a fun 3 hours planned for you today. My friend and colleague, CBS Sports' John Rothstein, he's going to join me a little later on this hour. We'll talk college basketball with him, get ready for the Final Four, get the latest on the coaching carousel. I'll have a college basketball icon, Christian Laettner, in the next hour. I'll talk Duke with him. NBC Sports' Rob Doster going to join me as well. And in hour three, I'll get into the NBA with Steve Kuyler. He'll be here in that final hour. But I wanted to start today with the biggest story in college basketball over the past 24 hours, and it actually has nothing to do with the Final Four. It's got something to do with the team that finished one game short of the Final Four, and that is the Kentucky Wildcats. And that's because John Calipari agreed, at least publicly agreed yesterday, to what is a described as a lifetime contract with the University of Kentucky. He's going to coach the Wildcats until he retires, and then he'll be a paid ambassador for UK, presumably until the day he dies. I guess that's what a lifetime contract means. And what's interesting about it is that though John Calipari said yesterday on his radio show in Lexington that this has nothing to do with any other school or any other offer, it is worth pointing out that the announcement came on the same day that my friend and colleague, Seth Davis, who works with me at CBS but also handles the college basketball division at The Athletic, it comes on the same day that Seth reported UCLA had made a significant offer and had conversations with John Calipari to be the next head coach of the Bruins. The offer, as reported, was 6 years, $48 million to be the next head coach in Westwood, which is hilarious, by the way, because I don't know if you have a calculator handy, but that's $8 million per year. John makes $9.2 million per year at Kentucky. So UCLA's big offer to John Calipari was to take an annual pay cut for an inferior job with an increase in cost of living. For people who don't know my background, I live in Memphis. I was the beat writer at the Commercial Appeal newspaper for the University of Memphis basketball program before I moved to CBS in 2006. I was John Calipari's beat writer. I don't want to say I know him better than most or everybody, but I spent a lot of time around him. And one of the things I can tell you is that there is no scenario where he is going to take a pay cut to be a basketball coach somewhere else. At least no scenario that involves taking an inferior job. And UCLA, though it is one of the biggest brands in college basketball and a decorated program with all those national titles, won mostly by John Wooden, undeniably it is an inferior job. And so when you combine the fact that it's an inferior job with an increase in cost of living and the type of job where if you don't win national championships, some of the high-powered boosters want to fire you, well, good luck getting John Calipari to walk into that. Because if you took John Calipari's resume at Kentucky, which is pretty amazing, and just translated it to UCLA over the same 10-year period, they would have him on the hot seat right now. UCLA fans would. Because they'd say he's been there 10 years, only won one national championship, just lost in the Elite Eight to a lower-seeded team again. Maybe we don't have the right guy for the job. So John Calipari's going to take that for less money? He was never going to be the next head coach at UCLA. And whether he used that as leverage or not is debatable, I guess. But again, his lifetime contract with Kentucky comes on the same day that it was reported that UCLA was trying to lure him to Westwood. Keep in mind, Ben Howland went to 3 Final Fours in 10 years at UCLA, got fired, won the Pac-12 regular season title in his final season, got fired. Why would John Calipari want that job? Just like I said, if John were UCLA's coach right now, they would probably have him on the hot seat, that is no way to live. UCLA will hire a good coach at some point, but I'll be surprised if it's somebody who is comfortable, well-compensated, and already at what is considered an elite job in a good league. So, what we now know, based on the news yesterday, is that, barring a surprise, John Calipari is going to retire at Kentucky. Whether that's 3 years from now, 6 years from now, 10 years from now. He's only 60 years old. Men are coaching into their 70s now. It could be 15 years from now. And so the question becomes, is this a good thing for Kentucky? Because yesterday when this is announced, I think almost all Kentucky fans are ecstatic about it, and they should be, I think. But some opposing fans, and maybe just casual college basketball observers, were anxious to point out that it means that Kentucky's going to continue to underachieve until John Calipari retires, because he's an underachiever, according to them. And with this in mind, I decided to go and look at some very basic things. Where Kentucky was ranked in the preseason in each of John's 10 seasons at UK, and where it finished. And it breaks down this way. His first year, 2010, that's the John Wall DeMarcus Cousins team. They were number 4 in the preseason AP poll, made the Elite Eight and lost. 2011, they were number 10 preseason AP poll, made the Final Four. 2012, number 2 preseason AP poll, won the national championship. 2013, number 3 in the preseason AP poll, went to the NIT. But remember, that's when Nerlens Noel, his best player, tore his ACL. That team, when Nerlens got hurt, was 17-6 overall, 8-2 in the SEC, on a 5-game winning streak, 18th at KenPom. That team was going to the tournament. It just missed the tournament when its best player tore his ACL. But either way, third in the preseason AP poll, went to the NIT. 2014, number 1 preseason AP poll, went to the title game and lost. 2015, number 1 preseason AP poll, went to the Final Four, lost to Wisconsin. 2016, number 2 preseason AP poll, lost in the round of 32. 2017, number 2 in preseason AP poll, lost in the Elite Eight. 2018, number 5 preseason AP poll, lost in the Sweet 16. And this year, number 2 preseason AP poll, lost in the Elite Eight. So that's 10 years of John Calipari at Kentucky. He's only in the NCAA tournament exceeded his preseason ranking twice in 10 years. It was 2011, 2012. He's been preseason top 4 8 different times, only made 4 Final Four. So if you want to call that underachieving, based on the preseason expectations, I suppose you're on some solid ground. You can label him that way if you want. But here's my question, and this has always been my question. Would you rather have somebody who can't create those expectations by recruiting and who then overachieves relative to preseason expectations but still does less than John Calipari? Because you can have that if you want it. In fact, Kentucky once had that. His name was Tubby Smith. Me, I tend to focus on the bottom line. And the bottom line with John Calipari relative to all other coaches, not relative to what you think he ought to do when he assembles the rosters that he assembles, but relative to what all other coaches do in real life, is pretty incredible. He's been at Kentucky 10 years. He's made 9 NCAA tournaments. Only time he missed was when his best player tore his ACL. And he wouldn't have missed that year if not for his best player tearing his ACL. He's been to 7 Elite Eights past 10 years. He's been to 4 Final Fours past 9 years. And by the way, if you take it back to his last 4 years at Memphis, John Calipari has made the Elite Eight 10 of the past 14 college basketball seasons, made the Final Four in 5 of the past 12 years. Nobody else has done that. But if you just want to focus on the 10 years at Kentucky, fine. We'll just focus on that. He's made 4 Final Fours in 10 years. That's more than any other coach in the same span in the country. And twice as many as everybody except Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo has gone to 3 Final Fours in the past 10 years. Jay Wright's been to two. Roy Williams, two. Jim Boeheim, Rick Pitino, Bill Self, Mike Krzyzewski, all two. John Calipari's been to four in the past 10. One more than Tom Izzo, and at least twice as many as anybody else. And I know he's only won one national title, and that's the thing people bang on him, right? How do you get all this talent and win only one national championship? But only two guys in the sport have won more. Two. That's it. In the same span. Mike Krzyzewski and Jay Wright. Both have two in the past 10 seasons. But nobody else has more than one. So it's not like there's these other guys out there doing all of this other stuff. Nobody's been to as many Final Fours as John. And only two coaches have won more national titles in the 10-year span. So John Calipari has more Final Fours over the past 10 seasons than anybody. Only Jay Wright and Mike Krzyzewski have more national titles. And somehow, John Calipari, who is literally one made shot or missed shot by Auburn, by his team, a made shot or a missed shot by Auburn, from being in the 2019 Final Four, somehow is something less than great? That seems crazy to me. Bottom line, Kentucky could not have a more perfect coach for the Kentucky job. And if you want to say he underachieves relative to his talent, fine. But the alternative to having somebody who can't, the alternative to this situation is having somebody who can't get the talent that he gets. Having somebody who can get lesser talent, but then maybe overachieve, but still do less in a bottom line business? You want that? I wouldn't want that. What I'd want if I were a Kentucky fan is exactly what I just got. Barring a surprise, John Calipari is going to coach Kentucky until he doesn't coach basketball anymore. And that's the best thing for Kentucky, best I can tell. I'm going to talk to CBS Sports' John Rothstein about this around 12:40 Eastern, but when we come back, I'll turn our attention to the Final Four. Zion Williamson is not involved, but there's still some nice storylines. We'll talk Final Four right after this break. I'm Gary Parrish, filling in for Jim Rome. You're listening to The Jim Rome Show. You know, some folks like to shop at a store while others prefer to do their shopping online. But no matter how you like to shop when it comes to auto parts, shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have everything you need under one roof, virtual or otherwise. From batteries, brakes, and belts to filters, transmissions, ignition, and shocks, O'Reilly has it all. They even have a full range of farm and agriculture heavy-duty parts, tools, and supplies. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock. And with brands you trust like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shocks, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery, or you can shop online with free pickup in the store. Car lovers love to shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts, and now you can earn rewards points online and at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. In fact, you can earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll get $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O'Rewards member today.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show. Live from New York, this is The Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports' John Rothstein going to join me in the next segment. We'll get the latest on the coaching carousel, and we'll talk Final Four with him. John Rothstein going to join me in about 20 minutes. But right now, let's turn our attention to the Final Four. Spent the opening segment talking largely about a team that's not going to be in the Final Four. That's the Kentucky Wildcats led by John Calipari, who agreed yesterday, at least publicly, to a lifetime contract at UK. What that means is that he's going to coach until he retires, and then he'll be a paid ambassador, I suppose, until the day that he dies. Barring a surprise at this point, he'll never coach basketball anywhere other than the University of Kentucky. And they were a made shot or an Auburn missed shot away from being in this Final Four, but they did not make it to Minneapolis. So the Final Four is set for Saturday, and it's going to be Auburn, Virginia, and then Texas Tech, Michigan State. It's a 1 seed, a 2 seed, a 3 seed, and a 5 seed. And I'm sure you've heard that almost nobody had this in their bracket. I think it was less than 1%, this exact Final Four. A lot of people had Virginia. Almost nobody had Auburn. And so the question becomes, okay, how big of a surprise is this Final Four? And obviously a surprise. But when you take a step back, it really maybe shouldn't be that surprising, because all four of these teams were in the top 13 at KenPom, which is the most regularly cited computer ranking of college basketball teams. So they were all four. As this NCAA tournament got underway, you know, top 15 teams in the country. And top 15 teams, I think, by definition, have realistic shots to go to the Final Four. What I always say is that in any given year, maybe 6 or 8 teams are built to win the national championship. But if you're a legitimate top 25 team, you've got a chance to go to the Final Four. All four of these teams were legitimate top 25 teams with realistic Final Four hopes. In fact, it's 3 power conference champions. Michigan State won the Big Ten. Texas Tech won the Big 12. Virginia won the ACC. And Auburn won the SEC tournament and is now on a 12-game winning streak. So there's really not anything that surprising here, even if most of us did have Duke making it to the Final Four, either North Carolina or Kentucky making it to the Final Four, and maybe Gonzaga making it to the Final Four to join either Virginia or Tennessee. And undeniably, it is a lesser Final Four than it otherwise would be with those big brands and those star players. I mean, there was a scenario on Thursday afternoon before the Sweet 16 got started where we could have had a Final Four with Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, and either North Carolina, Kentucky. Big brand, big brand, big brand, big brand. Lottery pick after lottery pick after lottery pick, including Zion Williamson, who has been a television ratings monster, in addition to a statistical monster, but a television ratings monster this season. Instead, we get Auburn, Virginia, Texas Tech, Michigan State. 2 schools here for the first time in school history. 3 coaches here for the first time in their college coaching career. And I was thinking about it yesterday. How many NBA players do we have? I mean, there'll be some, but let's define it this way. How many consensus top 25 picks in the 2019 NBA draft are in this Final Four? Maybe 2. Jarrett Culver at Texas Tech and DeAndre Hunter at Virginia. That's probably it. So it's not star-studded, but it is still filled with storylines. And I think the most obvious one being Chris Beard at Texas Tech, because you cannot overstate the job that he's doing in Lubbock, Texas. I mentioned that there are 2 schools that are in the Final Four for the first time in school history. Texas Tech is one of those schools. But it's even more interesting than that. Texas Tech had never even been to the Elite Eight until last season, until Chris Beard took them to the Elite Eight in year 2. He's only been a Division I head coach 4 seasons, and I know what he's doing right now is the most impressive of those 4 seasons, but his first season is also incredible. You might remember a Little Rock team 4 years ago that made the NCAA tournament, beat Purdue in the opening round. They won 30 games, 30-5. So his 1 year at Little Rock is a 30-5 record where he wins a game in the NCAA tournament. And unless you're like John Rothstein, you probably have no context for what that means. But here's the context. In the 3 years before Chris Beard got there, Little Rock finished outside of the top 200 in the country. Then he coaches them for 1 year. They finish in the top 60, win 30 games, advance in the NCAA tournament. Then he leaves. Outside the top 200. Next 3 years, including this year. In other words, there's a 6-year window, 3 before Chris Beard, 3 after Chris Beard, that Little Rock has experienced, and they're outside of the top 200 every year.
the 1 year he's there, top 60, make the NCAA tournament, win 30 games, and advance in the bracket. Incredible. Then he inherits what is a decent situation at a difficult school from Tubby Smith. Is respectable in year one. Year two, Elite Eight, first time in school history. Then loses five of his top seven scores and doesn't replace them with Zion Williamson and Cam Reddish and Trey Jones, but with just transfers and mostly unheralded recruits. Yet here he is, back in the Elite Eight, second time in school history, and in the Final Four, first time in school history. And given what that Texas Tech team just did in consecutive games to John Beilein and Mark Few, you'd be crazy to not give them a realistic chance to win the national championship. I will say that they don't fit the computer description of what a national champion typically looks like, because they're, I think, 30th in offensive efficiency, number one in defensive efficiency. Six of the last seven national champions have been top 11 in both. So you got to be good at both. Sometimes people ask you the question, what's more important when it comes to winning a national championship, offense, defense, both? Offense probably more important than defense, but both matter. And Texas Tech isn't quite efficient enough on the offensive end to fit the description of what a typical national champion looks like. But they're so good on the defensive end of the court that you've got to give them a chance. And the idea that you could say that with a straight face about a program that is historically at least one of the most difficult jobs in the Big 12 and one of the most difficult jobs in any Power 5 conference. The idea that they've made back-to-back Elite Eights with totally different rosters, but the same coach, and that's the key, but totally different rosters, and now have a chance in this Final Four to actually win two more games and cut nets in Minneapolis. I mean, you're talking about one of the best starts to any college coaching career in the history of the sport. And so then the next question that gets asked is, well, how is Texas Tech going to be able to keep him? And that is a long-term concern, I guess, because if you've got a great job and it's open right now, like UCLA, you'd be crazy not to at least see if he's interested in talking to you, because he's shown the ability to do things that normal coaches can't do. Even Bob Knight at Texas Tech could not do. I don't know that that means he'd leave Texas Tech. It just means it'd be crazy if you didn't at least ask him if you had a great job and you had an opening. But if you're looking for a storyline in this Final Four, one you can grab onto and root for, if your normal rooting interests are eliminated, that Texas Tech story is a pretty remarkable story. Mostly unheralded guys with a coach who has bounced around until finally getting a start at the Division I level, just two wins away from a national championship. I'll talk with CBS Sports' John Rothstein about this in the next segment, but right now...
Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Duke icon Christian Laettner going to join me in the next segment. We'll talk Zion with him. Christian Laettner going to be here right at 1 o'clock Eastern, but right now he is a college basketball insider for CBS Sports and best person on the planet I know to recommend places to eat in New York City. It's John Rothstein here on the Jim Rome Show. John, it's Gary. What's up, brother?
Gary, I just want to say, with the limited amount you've done in terms of audio work this season, it's great to be on your inaugural show where you're finally entering that medium.
It is a lot of talking from me over the past month. I've actually reached the point where I'm tired of hearing my own voice.
No question. It's that time of year, and we are officially in April, which means only a couple of games left.
This is April. John, let's start with the big news from yesterday in the sport. John Calipari agreed to a lifetime contract at Kentucky. What that means, my understanding is that he will coach until he doesn't want to coach anymore, and then he will be a paid ambassador for the university, I suppose, until the day that he dies. How big of a deal is this for Kentucky? How big of a deal is this for John? It should at least, I think, for the most part, in the speculation about what his future includes.
Well, I mean, John Calipari is a Hall of Fame basketball coach, but he's beyond a Hall of Fame businessman. I mean, nobody has ever been in a situation to maximize their product better than John Calipari. And, you know, we were working a lot together over the last couple of weeks, and I don't think there's one person within basketball circles that ever felt that he was going to be the next head coach at UCLA. But if potentially being linked to the UCLA job could better his standing at Kentucky, well, that was an advantageous situation for John Calipari to be in. The thing is this, once John Calipari sent out that tweet prior to the NCAA tournament that he wasn't going to be a candidate for UCLA, for all intents and purposes, this was a foregone conclusion that he was going to get some sort of significant extension at Kentucky, and the official word came out yesterday. But I also think if you're really splitting the atom right now, he was never in possible contention for UCLA because John Calipari, of all people, isn't going to take less money to coach another team, even if it is UCLA, especially at a place where the cost of living is more. And the other thing when it comes to Kentucky staff, you would need an assistant coaching pool of roughly $2 million just to break even to what those coaches are making now at Kentucky.
Let's stop here for a second because our friend and colleague Seth Davis reported yesterday that the UCLA offer to John Calipari was 6 years, $48 million. That is less annually than what John makes at Kentucky. How could you even, if you're UCLA, put that offer on the table? Because you and I both know a lot of coaches keep score by salary, but John especially keeps score by salary. There's no way that he's going to take an inferior job for less money with a higher cost of living. If you're UCLA and the offer is actually 6 years, $48 million, what is the point in even actually making the offer?
Well, I think it's an offer by the people at UCLA and the administration to appease their boosters, to appease their fans, that they're going after the highest profile candidate. But facts are facts right now. When you think about the scenario with UCLA, I'm going to stand by what I said, and I think you said the same thing in early January. There isn't a coach who's in a power conference situation that's going to be in a scenario where, for all intents and purposes, he leaves that to go coach in the fishbowl at UCLA.
Ultimately, and I'm talking to John Rothstein, CBS Sports, who do you think is the next UCLA coach?
This is what I think, and this is just American business. Jamie Dixon has a buyout of $7.6 million. And I saw the report last night, you know, in the L.A. Times, that just like you did, that he and Mick Cronin are the top two candidates right now at UCLA. I don't know of any athletic department that is going to say, especially to a coach that's performing well, to a program that hasn't been nationally relevant, okay, we're going to lower your buyout so it's more, you know, attainable for UCLA to pluck you from us. That doesn't make sense to me. Jamie Dixon, if you remember, in 2013 was also rumored to be taking the USC job, and what happened? All of a sudden, Pitt sent out a release that he had a 10-year, $25 million contract. This is what I can tell you. I think the financial aspect is going to make it hard for Jamie Dixon. If Mick Cronin is indeed the other candidate that is at, you know, the top of the list, which is similar to what I've heard, Mick Cronin is going to need certain things from UCLA to leave his obviously comfortable situation in Cincinnati. But Mick does fit the criteria of a coach who's not in a power conference, a coach who, for all intents and purposes, has built the beast, and I think the beast is turning on him a little bit. Mick Cronin is one of six programs at Cincinnati that have been to the NCAA tournament for nine consecutive years. Now, there's only been one trip to the Sweet 16 in those 9 years. But, Gary, you know, we've talked about this, I think, a lot this season on CBS Sports Network. With all due respect to the players on Cincinnati's roster, those players aren't built to win multiple games in the NCAA tournament. The only real surefire NBA prospect that Mick Cronin has signed at Cincinnati, you know, when he came into college from high school, was Lance Stephenson, and that team didn't even make the NCAA tournament. So I think based on the criteria we have right now, Mick Cronin is the more likely candidate, but this is the argument that I would make if you look at, you know, obviously people thinking that's not a sexy choice. I think, and, you know, I think you'd agree with this, based on the job that Mick did this year, winning 28 games with a roster that lost Jacob Evans, that lost Gary Clark, two guys at the NBA, and lost Kyle Washington, if you gave him UCLA's roster and gave him the ability to recruit that type of talent, I don't think you would disagree that you would think that UCLA would have a chance to be a perennial Sweet 16 team if he was the coach.
I'm talking to John Rothstein, CBS Sports. No, I do agree with that. I've got a high opinion of Mick. And, you know, UCLA, though it is an inferior job to Kentucky, it is still a big brand in a part of the country where players want to be. There are guys who will go to Lonzo Ball went to UCLA because it was UCLA in Southern California, and that's where he wanted to be. So you do have inherent recruiting advantages at a school like that, and I think Mick or any other competent Division I head coach would be able to take advantage of those things. I'm talking to John Rothstein, CBS Sports. I want to go back to Kentucky for a moment because, and I'm sure you saw this as well, when it is announced yesterday that John Calipari has reached a lifetime agreement with Kentucky, I think almost every Kentucky fan, and if it's not every, then it should be, is ecstatic about being able to keep that guy for as long as he's going to coach, because there's nobody better for that job than John Calipari. Some other fan bases were like, okay, good. That just means Kentucky is going to be underachieving the way it's underachieved under John Calipari. Is that a fair assessment, or is it ridiculous to think John Calipari has underachieved at Kentucky?
This is one thing that I think we all need to kind of remember, and this is something that I think happens this time of year in the NCAA tournament. Just because a team comes up a possession or two short doesn't make any coach any less greater of a coach or more greater of a coach. If Keith Smart misses a shot in 1987 and Indiana loses in the national title game, Jim Boeheim is a national championship coach 16 years before 2003. And he was the first one, I think, that came out and said in 2003 at the press conference, I'm no different a coach now than I was before the game started. And I think this time of year, we jump to all of these conclusions. Now, Duke is a team that has lost back-to-back heartbreakers in the Elite Eight. If Svi Mihailuk misses a shot last year, you know, for Kansas, then Duke has a chance to go to the Final Four last year. If R.J. Barrett makes one more free throw on Sunday, then Duke goes to the Final Four this year if it can beat Michigan State in overtime. I think one thing that we have to look at is not obviously the fact that, you know, people are underachieving. It's just that the NCAA tournament is a game of inches. And I think if you're Duke, you're a little bit more frustrated than Kentucky because, Gary, in the last 3 years, Duke has had this personnel in the program. Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, Frank Jackson, Luke Kennard, Grayson Allen, Trayvon Duval, Wendell Carter, Marvin Bagley, Gary Trent Jr., Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, Trey Jones, and the Blue Devils haven't gotten a one Final Four. That, to me, reiterates the point that it's a lot harder to win with one-and-dones than people think. And as of right now, we have not seen, in my opinion, a team full of one-and-dones without dominant veteran presences go to the Final Four and win a national title. Now, people will talk about the 2012 Kentucky team and the 2015 Duke team as being one-and-done dominant teams, but in 2012, Darius Miller, Deron Lamb, and Terrence Jones were all players who played in the 2011 Final Four, and Deron Lamb led Kentucky in scoring in the 2012 national title game. And in 2015, Matt Jones was Duke's leading scorer and tied for points in the Elite Eight win over Gonzaga. They also had Emile Jefferson, and they also had Quinn Cook in. Mike Krzyzewski and Jeff Capel, in two separate conversations since 2015, told me that in 2015, Quinn Cook was not their best player, but he was their most important player. So I think the stigma that you're going to have a Duke team, like we saw, you know, this past week at eliminated Michigan State, go to a Final Four and win a national title, that hasn't happened yet, where, you know, you have the large core of freshmen right now carrying the load, getting to a national title and being successful.
Talking to John Rothstein from CBS Sports. If you were Mike Krzyzewski or John Calipari, would you alter your recruiting approach at all? Would you, and John did this last year with Reed Travis, would you look at maybe adding grad transfers or transfers to go with your five-star freshman every year? That way you did have better, you would going forward have better roster balance than you otherwise would.
I wouldn't alter my recruiting strategy. I would be more patient with the idea of having program guys. And, Gary, here's a perfect example. How good would have Charles Matthews been this year at Kentucky?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, terrific, right? And that's a guy that you couldn't get him to stick around because there was no playing time there for him. But if you had him as a junior or a senior, he probably helps you a lot.
Right, and I think the thing we need to look at is right now, there's such a rush right now to find out at these schools, well, who's staying and who's going. I mean, if Kentucky next year at 4-5 at power forward and center have Nick Richards and E.J. Montgomery, that's as good of a 4-5 as it's probably going to be in college basketball. I think sometimes the brand and the idea of promoting the one and done at Kentucky and Duke and one trying to outdo the other sometimes supersedes the idea of putting together the best top, you know, capable basketball team. And I think if you see player retention at a higher level, especially a place like Kentucky where there are guys who aren't good enough to go to the NBA, you might have better results down the line.
Talking to John Rothstein from CBS Sports. He's on Twitter, at John Rothstein. Let's transition to the Final Four. It's not the Final Four I projected. I'm certain it's not the Final Four you projected. Not the Final Four most people projected. What's the best storyline in Minneapolis?
To me, the best storyline in Minneapolis is the idea that Bruce Pearl has somehow gotten Auburn to the point where it's playing on the sport's grandest stage. This is somebody who was not in college basketball 6 years ago. This is somebody who did not go to the NCAA tournament, you know, his first couple of years at Auburn. And this is somebody who did not have Tumo Kiki in a regional final win over Kentucky on Sunday. And it's somebody who didn't have to make an excess of 7 3-point shots to beat John Calipari in Kentucky. You know, you have talked a lot about some of the great hires we've seen in college basketball the last 5 years. You know, Buzz Williams, obviously at Virginia Tech, comes to mind as being one that was absolutely sensational. You have to put Auburn's decision to hire Bruce Pearl when he wasn't in coaching as one of the best five hires of the last 5 to 10 years. He's taken that program from a place where it wasn't thought of in the top tier of the SEC to a place right now where it's 80 minutes away from winning its first national championship. You know, I said on Sunday after Auburn beat Kentucky that Bruce Pearl is forever an immortal in the state of Alabama, which is obviously a state that's dominated by Nick Saban and Alabama football. That will reach an entirely different level if he wins one more game. And if he wins two, I mean, there will be a statue of him in Auburn, Alabama.
I thought going into that Kentucky game that Auburn was going to have to hit 12, 13 three-pointers, given the number of attempts it was going to take to get past Kentucky. As you point out, just didn't have to do it. They only made 7, still got by Kentucky. Do you give Auburn a legitimate chance to maybe cut nets next Monday night?
This is the type of game, I think, where you're going to have to see, you know, threes being made, because Virginia is in the scenario where they are going to force you to go over the top of your defense. It's going to be much more difficult, I think, to penetrate and beat Virginia off the bounce than it would be Kentucky. But I think the matchup in this game that's really fascinating right now is the dynamic between Jarrett Harper and Kihei Clark. Kihei Clark, who made that unbelievable pass to tie the game in regulation against Purdue, has really been the unsung presence this year for Virginia because of his ability to get underneath the opponent's point guard, and he's going to have to do that Saturday night. He's a critical piece for Virginia in this matchup.
You mentioned Virginia. Tony Bennett obviously got a big weight off of his shoulders by advancing to the Final Four for the first time in his coaching career, a year after becoming the first coach to ever, as a one seed, lose to a 16. Has he eliminated the questions about him and his program and his style by getting to the Final Four, or does he, sitting here as the only number one seed in this NCAA tournament remaining, does he have to go win the championship, or we're just moving the bar and asking new questions?
Well, I think by winning and getting to the Final Four, you exercise the demon of UMBC because it becomes a great bounce back story. It's a great bounce back story being in a situation where you were eliminated by a 16 seed last year, and now, you know, you have a chance to play in a Final Four. But I'll say this, if Virginia can win two more games and win a national championship, this will be one of the great one-year redemption stories that we've seen in the history of sports. Now, people can say, well, they were a one seed last year and so on and so forth, but there was no greater upset in the history of the NCAA tournament than Virginia losing to UMBC. It never happened. And on top of that, UMBC won by 20 points, and they weren't even the best team last year in the America East Conference. And if Tony Bennett, 12 months later, can go all the way to win a national title and go from purgatory to ecstasy, it will be one of the great one-year turnarounds, one of the great one-year redemption stories in the history of all sports.
That is John Rothstein, CBS Sports. You can watch him on CBS Sports Network live from Minneapolis later on this week. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, at John Rothstein. Thanks for being here, brother. I appreciate it.
Travel safe to Minnesota, man.
I'll see you soon. John Rothstein, CBS Sports. We got breaking news from Darren Revelle. He is reporting that the Alliance of American Football will suspend all football operations today. That new owner, Tom Dundon, is going to lose approximately $70 million on his investment. Dundon, Darren Revelle is reporting, is making this decision against the wishes of league co-founders Charlie Ebersaw and Bill Polian. But it appears, trusting the reporting of Darren Revelle, it appears that the Alliance of American Football will not have another game. So I believe it was just a 7-week season is all that we got. A league got a little bit of pop in, you know, when it launched. Television ratings were initially good. It added Johnny Manziel to the roster in Memphis. That got some attention, but ultimately, for a variety of reasons, they just could not sustain. Tom Dundon had said in recent weeks that they needed cooperation from the NFL Players Association. They were just never going to get that. And so now here we are. I'm going to be joined by Duke icon, college basketball legend Christian Laettner in the next segment. My name's Gary Parrish. You listen to the Jim Rome Show.